Pardon the interrupt, but I'm Joel Parody. And you know what, Brian? There's been a lot of things in the news about cheating. Have you ever been kicked out of a Magic tournament?
I actually have been kicked out of a Magic tournament only once. I showed up dressed as Elspeth.
Oh, really?
Apparently the TO did not care for that. Welcome to PTI on ManaDeprived.com, boys and girls. On today's show, we're going to be talking about the fallout from this weekend's Invitational, the upcoming PTQ season, and Magic as it will play out in the year 2012. But first, we have to talk about the impact of Drew Levin's article on cheating in Magic. Drew wrote an expose article detailing the potential cheating of SCG Player of the Year, Alex Bertaccini. Joel, do you think Drew's vigilante style of journalism was the right way to go about this situation?
Well, short answer, yes. I really am not the kind of person who likes a witch hunt. And it sort of is becoming a witch hunt. But people started talking about Alex cheating quite a while ago, and no one made any movement to do anything about it. So someone had to write this article or make this complaint.
Well, here's the problem I have with it, is that someone had to do it. But why did it have to be Drew? It seems like because of the history between the two, and I don't want to play gossip monger. We're here to talk about Magic, and I'm not getting into it. But there is a history between the two, and it's led to some credibility issues as far as to why these concerns were brought up. It doesn't seem like Drew is the person to really step in and lead the charge here. Now, that being said, go ahead, Joel.
Well, I just want to get back to the point that people were talking about it around the big Chicago TCG event. There was all sorts of rumors about Alex Bertaccini maybe skirting the rules. So if it's not Drew Levin, who is it? It needs to be done. We need to talk about it.
Isn't it the DCI's job to talk about it, though? Why is it all of a sudden an independent group of players who have to come forth and take charge of the situation? I mean, the fact of the matter is players aren't going to get anything done anyway. It ultimately hinges on the decision of DCI. Now, this being said, do I think he cheats? You know, I said on last week's show I don't want to do this on hearsay. I want to speak from my own experience. And I don't have experience in this case. But there's some pretty damning evidence. I think I'm comfortable saying that he's probably a cheater. And should the DCI take action? Yeah, probably. But I don't think that outing him in this way is really going to move forward anything. The investigation was already started. Things were already in place. So I think some of the most damning evidence against Alex, and I always find it funny that no one mentions this, the fact that Alex showed up to these SCG Opens with the exact same deck week after week, sometimes no changes in his main deck and his sideboard, while people like Jerry and people like AJ were constantly adapting to the metagame and looking for new ways to exploit the expected field. Somehow, Alex, despite not being half the player that Jerry is and certainly not being as good of a player as AJ, was able to get by on the most outdated technology in the entire world. How can you justify that? How can you explain that, Joel? Where did he get off thinking he could pull this one by people is what I have to ask.
You want the DCI to investigate stuff, and now you're telling me because he doesn't change his deck often enough that he may be guilty for not changing his deck often enough?
I'm saying it's proof that he's guilty, because no one could succeed with these outdated deck lists. You need the edge of metagaming, and he just totally bypassed it. You know why? Because he was drawing extra cards and taking cards out of his graveyard and cheating all over the place. So it's real easy to run with an outdated deck in that case.
That's the worst example of proof that I've ever heard. Well, keeping on this topic, does Star City Games have a responsibility as a tournament organizer to police their tournament?
Well, like I said, this is a decision that ultimately falls to the DCI. It does, in some sense, set a bad precedent for Star City Games to just tell people they can't attend the tournaments when the DCI hasn't spoken in any way. How are they justified in doing that?
Well, it seems like with this situation, there's a problem. And whenever I watch something on StarCityGames.com, they say, "We've got your back." Now, as a player who goes to maybe three or four of these events a year, I don't feel that Star City Games has my back.
It's not
when
their
they're
job to
completely
have your
silent.
back, Joel. It's their job to run a tournament week in and week out. And the DCI is supposed to have your back. The judges are supposed to have your back. They're the ones that are supposed to be eliminating cheating in the game, keeping an eye out for it, and getting rid of these people. I don't understand how the burden falls upon Star City to act in this case. It just seems like a gross overextension of their power to just ban someone on hearsay.
Every time I watch a game on coverage, there seems to be a judge sitting there. How are judges missing all these things?
Maybe
the
judges that SCG is providing are not up to the task. Maybe they need to find a better group of judges. Regardless of what you think of the quality of judging, it still ultimately falls on these judges to make such determinations and not the tournament organizer.
You know, I feel that sometimes the person who's delivering you the final service, whether it be food, prepared food, or in this case, tournaments, the person running the tournaments, the organization running the tournaments, does have a certain responsibility to ensure that they're legitimate tournaments.
Do they have a right to, though? Do they have the right to tell someone who has been convicted of no crime, as guilty as we may all think he is, that they are no longer allowed to attend this tournament?
It's a private tournament event. It's a private tournament system. I don't know if it has to be open to everybody. And I do know that they reserve the right from that statement they wrote to ban someone from the tournament for, say, misbehavior, threatening somebody. You know, things that usually do get followed up by the DCI as well.
Well, I'm not sure this is a threat, but we'll see how the both SCG and the DCI decides to handle the situation. All right, getting away from all this cheating nonsense, we'll go back to the part of the game I actually enjoy, and that's real Magic the Gathering. This week, in the top eight of the Invitational, which was standard, as you know, there were three copies of Blue White Illusions, and both players who went undefeated in the Swiss rounds were also piloting the Blue White Illusions deck. Is this now the best deck in the format? We asked this question last week of Mono Red. You said yes, Mono Red was the best deck, by the way. I think you were proven wrong this week. But is Blue White now the best deck in the entire format?
Well, I do know that from playing Illusions that Mono Red has a very, very good Illusions matchup.
This may be true.
But I'm not going to sit here and change my opinion on what the best deck is every week. But I do think it's of note that it's beatdown decks that are showing up at the top. Has this, you know, the pros have had a chance to crack it with Worlds. Some of the better players had a chance to crack it at the Invitational, and we still have no control deck. What's up with that, Brian?
Well, you know, I think just the axis of power for the cards that are currently available in the standard format tends to lead towards more aggressive decks, things like Blue-White Illusions, Tempered Steel. The fact is, the control decks are struggling right now on a basis of their mana. When you have to play cards like Traveler's Amulet, which does what it's supposed to do, sure. I mean, it'll find you the right colors of mana, but it's certainly not the most efficient solution to the problem we've ever seen. And when that's the case, you know, you're really giving up a lot of points in those very narrow control games where you just don't have the life points or the time to spare. You need to seize control of the board immediately. And missing a land drop or missing the right color of mana will have a serious detriment on your game plan. And this is why you're seeing the success of decks like Tempered Steel and Blue-White Illusions. Maybe we need some more mana fixing before control decks can really rise to the top. You saw some hints of it this week, though. There was Jerry's control deck in the top eight, which I mean I think he's on to something. I'm sure he'll continue to develop it and come up with maybe the answer to the format, but for now I think Blue White Illusions is taking a pretty clear place at the top of the metagame.
I guess Moorland Haunt is good
for sure.
Now it's been said, especially by somebody who's my co-host, that the Legacy Get metagame, the fact that it was so diverse, was a symptom of people just making bad deck choices, and that, you know, most non-blue decks were just not playable. Does Jerry T, Reed Duke, and Caleb Durward, all piloting non-blue Legacy decks, change your opinion on this? This is a really big tournament, the Invitational. $10,000. They wouldn't have made a Maverick deck choice on purpose.
Joel, you know me well enough for now that you know I will never admit I was wrong. So I'm going to say no, this does not prove that non-blue decks are viable. What it does prove is that non-blue decks were very viable for this tournament. You have to remember the basis of the Invitational. All these people who won qualifiers either through, in-store qualifiers or doing well in an SCG Open, are invited to play for a very high EV tournament. Maybe some of them aren't legacy players, don't have access to the cards, that are inherent in the more powerful strategies, and therefore there are a lot of people playing fair strategies at the Invitational this week. When fair strategies are being played, decks like Maverick, decks like Reed's deck are well designed to exploit the situation. Look at how well Christian Devalanti did with Charbelcher. I believe he went 7-1. If you bring Charbelcher to your average Legacy Open, you're going to have a very quick day. This is not a conclusive proof that Legacy is turning away from blue decks.
I'm not saying it's conclusive proof either, but you cannot tell me that there was a card availability issue at a $10,000 tournament where about half the tournament was legacy. People are bringing their best decks. If they
Joel,
can afford to
I've seen
play.
card availability issues at Pro Tours. Card availability issues can exist all over the place. I've seen people not be able to play a certain deck because they haven't been able to get the pieces for it. My buddy Jason Ford played a Birthing Pod deck at the last at the first Modern Pro Tour, only because he couldn't get the pieces to a Polymorph deck that we had brewed up, which I mean I think it would have been better for that tournament. Who knows? But these issues do happen. You and I are a little older. We maybe have some more resources and than your typical Magic player, and deck choice does come into play. I can assure you of that. And I think this was a situation where deck choice affected the perceived metagame.
Well, I was joking around that it was just a bunch of writers who didn't want Brainstorm to get banned, got together and made sure they didn't play blue.
Maybe they all pulled together and took one for the team there. All right, so the SCG Invitational was a great tournament to watch. I watched a lot of it. Do you think there's anything that can be changed about the tournament to make it even better?
Well, I was thinking that the tournament, the Invitational, is sort of a showcase of the events that Star City puts on. They add Legacy because Legacy is every Sunday. They have Standard because that's Saturday, the main tournament. Well, on Sunday, they also have Draft Opens. And these Draft Opens can get you into the Invitational. I'm very surprised that there isn't a draft portion of the Invitational. I know that there's some time constraints, as well as a lot of this event is to be covered and is to be an advertisement for Star City Games. And people have sort of shown that they don't really like watching draft as much. But to truly have a tournament that represents everything that the Star City Opens are about, I think you need to add a draft.
Now, let me tell you what I would do with the Invitational. I would throw the current system entirely out the window. I would take, just like Wizards did with World, the 16 best performers on the SCG circuit, and I would have them play a variety of formats. I would have them cube draft. I would have them do Rochester drafts they were going to be drafting. I would have them play Modern. I would move through a whole range of formats to make the event, to your point, as coverage friendly as possible, as exciting, as unique as anything that's seen in the game. I think doing so would draw in a whole new audience and really be something unique in the game as opposed to just I mean, is it a special tournament? Yes, but we're still just playing Standard and Legacy. It's the same thing as we see every other week, just better players playing against each other. I think SCG should take the opportunity to do something outrageous and different. Do you think that would succeed, or is that am I just being too outlandish
I
here?
don't know if they want to turn their hill into a circus.
But it's not a
I think
circus.
it's being
It's like
outlandish.
the old it's like the old Invitationals that Wizards used to run. It's
And
exactly the
where's
same.
that?
It's gone. But if you ask players, do they want it to be gone? Absolutely not. It was the high point of many a Magic player's career. The prize was a high point of many Magic player career, and it's something that the players genuinely miss. And I think would like to have some type of comparable alternative put back into the fray.
See, I've heard people talking about one of the old Invitations. I think they were playing for Ante, and
Yeah.
Kai won with, what, a Jewel
A
Bird? And
jewel bird. That's an amazing story. How can you not
people were
love
very
that story?
disappointed about that.
Now, I don't care if people are disappointed or not. That's a great story.
The next PTQ season is fast approaching. Modern is going to be the format of choice. Where do you think players should be in the first few weeks of the Modern season if they're looking to score that blue envelope?
Well, in the first few weeks of a new format, I think you need to be looking to do the most powerful thing possible. And there's a few angles to do that now. There's Past in Flames, there's Splinter Twin Decks, but one angle that I really like is the surprise angle. And I think a great place to be in these early weeks would be to integrate the Splinter Twin combo into Zoo. Play a Naya style Zoo list with Village Bellringers and Splinter Twins. So you kind of have like this combo out of nowhere win where you're still pressuring their life total, you're forcing them to tap out to deal with your threats, or just, playing a game of attrition to the point where they no longer have removal for your Village Bellringer. I think that's a deck list to keep your eye on. It could be something to look at. And the classic staples will be there, regular Zoo, bigger Zoo. We do have to see what the December 20th bannings hold, though. We don't know what's going to happen with that. But my instinct says to lean combo in the early weeks.
Yeah, if I was and without looking at it, without having the ban list happen or not, just to assume zero things get banned, which I don't think that's true. I would be looking into maybe playing a rug list I've seen that uses Delver, sort of a tempo list. That looked very, very interesting to me. Zoo is going to be there, and that's the one thing I'm sort of. I think when I build my deck for the modern season, I'm really looking to the fact that people are just going to be copying a lot of the big deck lists.
At first, absolutely. I have heard people talk about that rug list. I think that's just derivative of Legacy. People see, oh, a lot of these cards are in Legacy and it does well there, so I'll just play the nearest facsimile in Modern, and I'm sure the deck will be good there too. But you're dealing with a totally different metagame, and I'm not sure you want to be playing Delver lists against a field full of Zoo. But I mean, we'll see how that shakes out. You'll see control decks rise after a couple weeks. But in these early weeks, the easiest way to steal an envelope is just do things that are more powerful than what your opponents are doing. Your opponents are casting 3/2s, win the game on turn 3. Look for that weakness to exploit, and that's how you really get ahead in the young part of a PTQ season. All right, Joel, we're fast approaching another calendar year 2012, and that means it's time for resolutions. Do you have any Magic the Gathering based resolutions for the year 2012?
Yeah, I have a resolution for myself, but it's one that I think other people can sort of get on board with. I'm going to try more than ever to be respectful and nice to the people I play.
That's a
Magic
great
is a
resolution. Great resolution.
it's a live social game, and I've really always tried to focus on very nice to my opponent. But there have been times, especially playing competitively, going to these events every weekend, where I've caught myself being the kind of person I wouldn't be if you met me at a bar or a local event. I try to be a nice guy, and I'm not going to let a game of cardboard cards make me anything but myself. And I just think everyone should try to be nice to their opponents in the live game.
Awesome resolution for the new year. I'm going to add that to my list as well. We're all competitive people and get a little carried away sometimes, but I think that is a good thing to strive for. One thing I would like to do magically this upcoming year is kind of try and pay the game back a little. I've always thought of some kind of, I guess, like a charity system maybe, where so you could go to big events and kind of scoop up all those draft extras that go all over the place and maybe build some starter type decks for some kids who don't have a lot of money, or maybe just some kids who are interested in the game, and kind of do something to bring another generation into the game. I want the game to keep going, so maybe 20 years from now I can still play, and if God forbid I have any kids, they can still play. And so that's going to be my magical resolution for the new year. I'm going to try and get that off the ground and get something started with that.
I like that. I'm pretty happy we have some pretty good resolutions. I hope
Yeah,
they
you wouldn't think we're such good people, cause we're really not all that friendly, and I mean, I guess at heart we're pretty good guys. All right, PTI fans, for our very first 10 Good Minutes feature, we have today a very special guest. We want to welcome in right now, multiple Grand Prix winner, multiple SCG Open winner, and the host of us here at PTI's favorite piece of Magic media, Jerry TV. Jerry Thompson. Jerry, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, no problem.
Beautiful. We got to start off with this question. You found yourself unwittingly at the center of one of the biggest Magic controversies we've seen as of late, and there's really no way around it. So I just want to come out and ask you, why did you dye your hair, and what did you think of everyone's reaction to it?
This is not the first time I've dyed my hair. I don't understand why it's such a big deal now.
I
It was
mean,
like the It seemed like it was the third time in the last year.
It seemed like it was an outrage. It was all anyone could talk about throughout all the coverage.
Yeah, that's weird. I haven't seen the coverage yet, but I just know, like, the comments from the stuff with me and Kibler and everything, people are like, what the hell happened? And there's a lot of, like, Super Saiyan jokes that get really old, but...
I heard those. I did.
I don't know. When I started dating my girlfriend, my current girlfriend, my hair was blonde, and then it grew out, and I cut it, and she wanted it blonde again, so, I mean, who am I to deny her?
I know how that goes. You always have to defer to the women and what they ask. It just makes your life easier.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so now to the real issue. The thing that everyone is dying to hear about. You're kind of implicitly implicated in a situation, and we need to get your opinion on it. Do you think that Alex Bertoncini is a cheater?
Well, Alex and I are pretty good friends. Like, we talk at all the tournaments and stuff and discuss decks and all that, but I wouldn't say that we're, like, best friends. You know, we're not very close, and I just don't feel like it's my place to say one way or the other. You know, like, there's some stuff out there that people think is evidence, and there's a lot of things that people can say to explain that stuff away, and Alex himself just went on the MetaMagic to discuss that, and he just chalked a lot of it up to, like, sleep and just being a sloppy player, which, you know, he is kind of, to just kind of agree with him on that point. And, I mean, I myself did something last weekend that people were, like, calling me a cheater for.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that situation, because, you know, there was some outrage as far as that situation went. People did accuse you of cheating, and I know from some experience in seeing you play, you're one of the cleaner players around, without a doubt. So just talk about the situation, let us know what happened.
Well, it was very strange, because that's something that's, like, never actually happened to me before. It was so weird, and... So I'm playing my match, and it's, like, game three, and I'm X and two, like, still fighting for top eight. And my opponent, who's playing Illusions, plays a Geist. And I Ratchet Bomb his two guys away, play a Pristine Talisman and a Nihil Spell Bomb. And then I get to untap, facing down his Geist, and that I don't have an answer for. And my lands are, like, two Blue-White Duels, an Island, a Shimmering Grotto, and a Pristine Talisman. And I pass the turn. I'm fully expecting him to play Sword of War and Peace and equip it to his guy. But I sided in an Ancient Grudge for game three to deal with the sword that I saw in game two. So I was ready for that. And sure enough, he did that. And I'm pretty happy to, like, grudge his guy, but, like, grudge his sword. But in the middle of it, I'm thinking about how, like, I still need an answer to this Geist. And I have the Spell Bomb in play that, like, normally I would like to save for a Snapcaster or something. But I'm just like, yeah, I need to sack this to draw a card. And in order to do that, I need to keep black mana open. So it was, like, in the middle of casting the spell, and I start thinking about, like, other things that I want to do. And then I realize that I have a black mana. Like, I just have to tap in a way that leaves my black mana open so I can cycle this end of turn. And it just ended up, like, I didn't really think about that I needed red for grudge also. You know, it's just, like, this weird situation that has literally never happened to me before.
Jerry, if there was some sort of, you know, cheating that comes out and, you know, the DCI rules on it, would you feel that you were robbed of the Player of the Year award?
I don't think so. I mean, like, even if Alex is a cheater, like, he still has to play really good Magic to get to where he's gotten to, you know? Like, he's top eight at two invitationals, he wins a bunch of tournaments, and, like, the cheats that people have on camera or whatever, like, they're just, like, minor value things, you know? Like, him playing, like, a six land with the two explorers thing, like, that isn't going to win him the game straight up, you know? Like, he still has to play good Magic to win. And I'm not saying that, like, you know, people can cheat and that's fine or whatever. Like, that's definitely not the case. But, like, he's still very good. And I feel like if he was a cheater, he could still beat me in a Player of the Year race straight up, you know? Like, I was not going to every single tournament and trying as hard as I could have probably. So no, I mean, like, if he was as clean as I am, like, I would be fine losing to him. And I don't feel like I got robbed in any way. And if he does end up being a cheater, like, justice takes time. So I'm not too mad at, like, Star City or the DCI, like all these other people are, where they're just like, he should have got banned a long time ago, you know? Like, if he's shady or scum or whatever, like, they'll get him. And then I'll be fine with that.
It sounds like you have a healthy outlook on the situation, which is certainly the way you want to approach it. How do you feel about the way Drew approached the situation as far as basically serving to out Alex and collecting all this evidence and bringing it to the public?
You could look at it like Drew is doing the community a great service, but there is something else to it where they used to be friends, and there was a lot of, there's like a falling out where Drew was like dating Alex's ex, and then Alex knew that Drew had a 14-card sideboard in a top 8 match, and then Drew presented for game 3, and Alex immediately called him on his sideboard. And then I spent the entire next week in Alabama with those two, and they were just at each other's throats the entire time, you know? So, like, I totally understand, like, them being mad at each other. And I think Drew does have good intentions overall, but I don't know. It seems like if he's going to put it on himself to, like, clean up the game, like, he probably should have started with someone other than Alex, because now it's going to seem like, okay, he goes after Alex, and Alex ends up being a cheater. Then the next person he goes after, people are going to be like, okay, so what's your problem with this guy? Like, because you had something personal with Alex, you probably have something personal with this guy too. So it just, it doesn't feel as selfless as it probably should, I guess. And I don't know if that's like a bad thing or not. Like, if he ends up getting a cheater out of the game, then it doesn't really matter what his motives are, right? Like, the game is better for it. But if it ends up being that, like, Alex is not a cheater, like, it definitely sucks because, like, that kid's name is just ruined.
For sure.
If you, what's your opinion of what the end result of this whole thing's going to be?
I have faith in the DCI to do their job well.
That's fair enough. So saying the DCI does move forward and ban Alex, do you think that Star City Games should step in and, if not legally, at least pose the question to Alex of turning the Power 9 that he was awarded over to you?
Well, I feel like with the way that Alex is responding to all these claims and allegations that, you know, he's going to maintain his innocence, and I don't feel like he's going to feel obligated to fork anything back over, you know? And I don't feel like Star City's even going to ask. Like, there's no reason to. It's over and done with.
Well, you know, we're really here to talk about Magic Gathering, not talk about cheating. So I want to talk to you about the deck you played at the Standard Invitational. Do you think that's a deck that's a contender moving forward?
Definitely.
Now, that's the result of you working with Michael Jacob, right, and kind of just amalgating this four-color control together over the course of a few weeks?
Yeah. I top 8-ed, and Mike has had very good records with it over the course of, like, 3 weeks now, playing in daily events and in the tournament as well. And Ben Hayes played the same deck as me and got 9th on Breakers, which kind of sucked because Ben's like a super good guy. And I feel like the deck is very good. It needs some changes. Like, as always, things need work. And we were really good against the normal illusion decks, but like, if someone is playing like Prozac illusion deck, that's much harder for us. So you just have to adapt to beat that. But I think it's possible. I mean, like, we're playing all 5 colors. Like, we can adapt to fight anything.
You know, we spoke a little earlier about the mana bases in Standard right now being one of the main restrictors of control. And the way you guys dealt with that has been innovative at times. You played Traveler's Amulet at Worlds, I believe. Maybe you could speak a little bit about the challenges that the mana of the current format has presented to you. Is it really detrimental, influential in shaping the way you build your decks right now?
Well, restriction breeds creativity, and I think me and Mike just dug really deep to make the mana work. And in the end, I think our mana base is better than, like, a lot of the 2-color decks where, you know, someone's playing, like, a blue-red Delver deck and, like, their mana base is terrible, but at least we can cast our spells on time, you know? Like, the mana base is good enough. And even for the Invitational, like, we cut the amulets. And it took Mike, like, a week of just hammering it into me where he's just saying, like, I get flooded every game. I can cast all my spells. Like, that's no problem. We don't need these things. And then finally I agreed with him, you know, but it seems so bad just looking at it where we just have a bunch of different basics, random dual lands, you know, it looks kind of just like a mishmash, you know, like one Black Cleave Cliffs, a bunch of Shimmering Grottos, like the mana base can't be good, but it actually is. And Mike has put in just a ton of work to get the mana to work. And also it has to do with like building your deck correctly, where we're basically just a blue-white deck with some splashers. So, it's really not that bad.
How did you end up playing a non-blue deck in Legacy? You know, we've been talking a lot on our show how you just want to play blue. You just want to play Brainstorm. So, were you happy with that choice?
I thought the deck was really good. I just crushed the blue decks that I played against, and I lost to a deck with Pernicious Deed, which we knew going in was a problem, but we didn't think anyone would play. But after St. Louis, the open that was before the Invitational, I was trying to convince Mike to just like brew some sort of proactive deck, because I felt like the control decks in Standard aren't really that good. Like, your answers don't necessarily line up with the threats. Like, Gutshot is good against a bunch of different stuff, but if they don't draw like one toughness creatures, like they just draw a bunch of Geists or whatever, like you're gonna die. So I was really interested in playing Illusions, but Mike wouldn't let me, and he's a pretty persuasive guy, like both by laying out well-reasoned arguments, but also just like yelling at me. So he convinced me that the Standard deck was good and we should play that, but I kind of got him to compromise where I sold him on the green-white deck.
I see. And was that decision driven at all? I postulated earlier that there was a lot of success for these non-blue decks because of the kind of unique meta of the Invitational. Did that play into your decision-making at all? Was it just the right time for a non-blue deck to rise up?
Well, I felt like 80% of the players in the Invitational were going to be really, really good, and those were the people that we had to beat, and the majority of those people are going to be playing blue decks. And as kind of mopey as the green-white deck is, you know, it's just like a bunch of creatures and doesn't have a whole lot of play to it on the surface, you know, like you're not interacting with them, like killing their stuff, countering their spells, drawing cards, whatever. But it actually ended up being a lot better than I thought it was. Because, like, I played against, like, some show-and-tell decks and a Painter Servant deck, and I got to interact enough, and I got to beat those decks pretty handily. Like, people just aren't set up to deal with, like, Mother Runes and Knight of the Reliquary and stuff, you know? They expect to kill, like, one Delver or one Tarmogoyf per game, and then that's it. But if you play a creature every turn, like, they're actually kind of screwed.
It is surprising how much interactivity you're able to pull out of the green-white deck. I know in my times playing it, it doesn't really feel like a green-white deck. It's got some more some elements that aren't usually present in that color combination. I'm moving on past kind of like the playing Magic stuff. We know you've taken on a new role with Star City Games. I wondered if maybe you wanted to talk a little bit about what you're doing over there now.
Yeah, sure. I kind of ended up there because I was living with my girlfriend in North Carolina, and our roommates sucked, so we wanted to move. And we were just kind of like shopping around looking for jobs and stuff. And I talked to Steve Satan about just going up to Roanoke and doing some stuff in-house. And then he talked to Pete Hoffling, the president, and we just like worked out some sort of thing that I could be doing. So I'm doing like an independent contract work. My official title is Mixed Media Specialist, which basically means they don't have a real title for me, but
sure,
that's fine. I'm doing like a lot of content stuff, just like the newsletter, the TV show. Whenever someone like Kibler's in town, we'll do like the playtesting videos and stuff like that. And then I do some database entry with like the deck database, and I collect like all the lists from the standard tournaments, assign them an archetype, and then they get to do whatever crazy math program they have to make the too much information articles, where they have like all the matchup percentages and breakdowns and stuff. And that stuff's pretty interesting to me. So like, I like looking at all the deck lists from tournaments anyway, and now I get to see like every single one.
You get to do it for your job. Yeah, that's
yeah,
yeah.
So it's actually pretty beneficial. And then like, I like writing about Magic anyway, and I'm doing like 3 or 4 pieces of content a week for the newsletter, so that's cool too.
Well, for the average person, the thing that people have seen the most, you know, the biggest change lately is the fact that you've been working on Jerry TV. Has that been easier or harder than you thought it was going to be?
I knew it was going to be very hard, and I don't know, it's probably about what I expected. Where like, I knew that reading a script in front of a camera is probably not going to come the easiest to me. And that's been the case, you know, like I sound like a robot, I guess, you know, people will keep telling me that like, you know, practice makes perfect or whatever, but I feel like without knowing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing, I'm just like practicing badly and probably reinforcing some bad habits and stuff. So I don't know, like I have to figure out how to fix it, but I think eventually it'll be good.
I think you've definitely made strides just in the short time you've been doing it. And I'll say this, I mean, this is only our second week of casting now, and you really don't know how tough it is to... We do a little bit of scripting, obviously some prep work leading in, and it's really tough to deal with a script and sound natural while you're doing it. And I do think you're coming along, and I know everyone I know in the Magic community definitely really likes Jerry TV, and we've like seen that evolve. So definitely keep up the good work with that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It definitely helps when people are just like, hey, you know, I know you're you're just starting off or whatever, but I really love it. It's great. You know, that makes me feel pretty good about what I'm doing and not get too distraught about like how bad I sound or whatever, you know. Makes me want to keep going.
For sure. Yeah, it's definitely something great for the community and something that wasn't around before. All right, so we want to close with this. Earlier in the show, Joel and I made some Magic the Gathering resolutions for 2012 since we're approaching the new year. So we wanted to see if maybe you had any Magic resolutions you wanted to make for the coming year.
Yeah, like Adam Yurchik posted this article on TCG Player that was pretty cool, where it's a theory piece from him, and he's not really a theory guy, but it really got me thinking pretty hard, and I talk about this a little bit on the show this week, where he suggested that Magic isn't really about card advantage anymore. It's more about just like emptying your hand as fast or faster than the other person.
That was a great article.
Yeah, and I mean, I knew that like Magic was changing a lot, and I was struggling to build these control decks with inevitability and lots of card advantage and stuff. Like, it just doesn't function the way that it used to, you know? So I think that I have to kind of explore more of the proactive strategies, and that's why I really want to attack at the Invitational, and that's what I'm going to try and do next year.
Interesting, interesting. Well, that sounds like a noble resolution, and we definitely wish you the best of luck in the coming year, and I can't tell you how much we appreciate you coming on the show. We're just starting off, and it really means a lot to have someone with some credibility, unlike us two idiots, on this show. So we appreciate it, and again, Jerry, best of luck with everything. And
thanks
for stopping by, buddy.
Yep. Anything for you. Anything for you, Brian.
Beautiful. I appreciate it, man.
All right.
Thank you so much to Jerry T for stopping by. It was a great interview and sort of an honor to get a guest like that in our second episode. But all right, it's time to play the game that no one truly ever wins, Odds Makers. So I'm going to throw it over to our friend, Bryce, not the fat judge, Menard.
Okay, guys, what do you think the chances of a Tarmogoyf reprint in Innistrad block are?
All right, Tarmogoyf being reprinted in Innistrad block. I will go with 100% on this one. There is no chance that Tarmogoyf is not reprinted by the time we are through this set. It is a graveyard-themed set. Wizards pushing modern. We need more Tarmogoyfs out there. They don't want $100 Tarmogoyfs running around. This card will be reprinted 100%, Joel.
Oh, well, I'm not nearly there. I'm thinking that there's a little better than half chance. I'll say 65% chance.
65%? You don't think they need to do something immediately about the availability of modern cards? This is the perfect opportunity to do so.
They should have been doing things for the last few months, and they've done nothing. So if you expect the messiah of the modern season to show up in the next set, I think you're going to be disappointed.
Third set? You think we'll get it by the third set?
Better chance there. I do agree with you. Graveyard based set. That, you know, the future site cards are supposed to, you know, look at the future. Maybe they're going to get reprinted. But I'm not as confident in you. They tend not to reprint too many $100 cards.
100%. It'll happen. Bryce, what's our next question?
What are the odds that Alex Bertoncini gets to play Sanctioned Magic throughout the 2012 year?
I'm going to have to go with 35%. Meaning, I think there's a good chance he's going to get banned. I think the DCI is going to look at the data and sort of get pushed around by this witch hunt. So I'm going to say 35%.
Joel, you're waffling a little bit too much for my liking. I'm going 0%. People like this cheat compulsively. He doesn't even know he's doing it half the time. There's no way he makes it through an entire calendar year with the style of play he's gotten used to. Even if he's not cheating, he's the sloppiest player on the face of the earth. And with judges watching him like a hawk, which they will be from this point forward, I don't see him making it through the calendar year. 0% chance he plays Magic throughout the year.
Bryce, next question.
What are the odds that Channel Fireball completes their Pro Tour sweep next season?
So we're asking the chances of Channel Fireball winning every single Pro Tour next year. While I definitely have a great amount of respect for them as a team, this is a difficult task. I can't think of anything equivalent that's ever been done in the history of Magic. But if any team can do it, it's going to be them. I'm going to give them a 10% chance. 10%.
Brian, you're right. If any team can do it, it's going to be them. So I'm going to give them a 45% chance to do it.
45%, Joel? Doesn't that seem a little high? They didn't win the last Pro Tour, you realize.
Records are made to be broken, so I want to go out there on a limb and make a good prediction, a true prediction.
Joel, showing a lot of faith. I like it. All right, Bryce, what do we got next?
What are the odds that Planeswalker points are integrated with Magic Online anytime soon?
Now, this is a question My answer here is going to be optimistic. I hope that Wizards is not this stupid. If they do this, they have turned Magic into a grind beyond belief. You're talking about 24-hour Moto teams who will be triple queuing Pauper events to gain Planeswalker points. This cannot happen. I'm optimistically giving it a 0% chance of happening.
I'm going to give it a higher percent chance of happening, 15%, because we know that Wizards loves to sell cards they don't have to print. It's just take money for writing a computer program. But I agree with Brian on this one. I can't create any argument. It'd be the worst thing that could happen to the game.
Absolute worst. It would undoubtedly generate a huge amount of commerce, bring more players to the game, which you can look at as a plus, but you're looking about people triple queuing, waiting for people to take an action for 5-10 minutes at a time. It's just not what you want to be doing for Moto's future, that's for sure.
I just think you're too naive to say zero.
Well, like I said, it's me being optimistic. Hopefully I'm right on this one. Bryce, what's our next question?
What are the odds that Pardon the Interruption finds out about Pardon the Interrupt and tries shutting us down for shamelessly ripping them off?
I mean, this is the most derivative show in the history of shows. We steal their format. We steal their games. We kind of stole their theme music. If any show is ever going to be shut down for doing such a thing, it's got to be ours. I'm going to put it at 75%. I'd put it higher if anyone cared about what we were doing here, but no one cares. So, I mean, maybe we'll sneak under the radar. Joel, what do you think?
Brian, did you forget to tell me that we took this idea from another show?
Oh, I didn't mention that.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we're definitely on the hook for that one. I'll blame it all on you. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
What's your percentage? What's the chances we get caught doing this?
0% chance.
0%? No, okay.
There's another podcast that uses, you know, Yo MGT Taps. That's a direct play on the old MTV show, Yo MGT Raps. Or MTV Raps. So I think there's a 0% chance they're going after us. We're nobody. We're on some site in Canada.
That's true. Being Canadian is definitely, for the first time ever, a benefit to us. All right, Bryce, who won today? What do we got?
I'm going to have to give this round to Joel because there's no way we're getting
it. Oh, come on. All right, let's move along to the big finish. Joel, what's the best Magic-inspired name for a child?
This is an interesting question, but I do have a friend who got his wife to name their baby a slight Liliana variant. And yes, he tells us all that he did name her after Liliana. Aaron Forsythe says that there's going to be Planeswalker point changes that are coming because in tweet form he said he agrees with some of the things that Brian Kibler brought up in his recent article. Do you even buy that?
I mean, I have to buy it because otherwise I don't ever get to play professional Magic again. So let's hope it works out. Joel, what do you think is the best non-Magic trading card game of all time?
Well, I don't know if my experience is going to show my age, but I'm going to say the original Star Wars Decipher TCG. It was a really fun game. You sort of played out the storylines of the movie in a way or got a bonus for doing it. There was movement. There was battle. It was a complex game, and I loved it.
I always liked Rage. You ever play Rage?
I did play a little Rage, but I like Star Wars better. Brian, if you had one deck and you had to play it for the rest of your life, what's that deck going to be?
Counterbalance Top. End of question. I wish it was good right now. I probably will play it even though it's not good, to be honest with you.
So depressing.
All right, pack one, pick one, Joel. Pepperoni or sausage?
Oh, sausage, because I love sausage.
Obviously. Oh. The pro choice is pepperoni, just so you know. It's a clear value play.
Oh my God, that's so wrong. But we don't have time to argue about this one. I mean, we could have a podcast about this.
This is true. All right, Joel, so what are you going to be playing in the Magical world this upcoming week?
As much, if I can play, because I'm really busy, as much fun stuff as possible. For the next few weeks, there's no big events. There's not even a GP or a Star City event. I want to play something weird. It's sort of my goal is to play some sort of off-the-wall decks, something that I've worked on, brewed up, or does something really weird. I can't wait for it.
Very ambitious goal. I got my Moto account back today. I finished law school finals this morning after a almost two-month hiatus from Moto, which is certainly the longest I've gone since I started playing the program way back in, like, Odyssey days. I am able to go back on Moto. I'll be brewing, playing dailies, drafting, all that good stuff. You guys will see me on there, Brian G. Feel free to give a shout. Let me know if you have any comments about the show. And again, guys, thanks for listening. It's really great that you guys take the time out of your day to listen to our podcast. Again, I'm Brian Gottlieb.
And I'm Joel Parody. See you later, Canada.